This is Growing Forward, the collaborative podcast between New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report. I'm Megan Kamrick, a New Mexico PBS correspondent and news director at KUNM.
I'm Andy Lyman with New Mexico Political Report.
On our last episode, we visited a testing facility to learn more about one of the key elements of the cannabis industry, one that is very complicated and extremely important. And today, we move from the lab to the classroom. We're joined by Shannon Jaramillo, a cannabis educator and founder of Seed Crust. Thanks for joining us today, Shannon.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a while since the last time we talked, and listeners may remember a couple of conversations we had with you in February before the state passed the bill legalizing recreational cannabis. At that time, you had just launched a training program with Northern New Mexico College. Can you remind listeners what Seed Crust does and then give us an update on Seed Crust and the training program?
Sure, I'd love to. We're a training specialist firm, and we specialize in cannabis curriculum. We also have software tools and a learning management system. So part of what we provide to the community is a home to study relevant certificates so that they can get a job. And we did. We launched a successful program through Northern New Mexico College and actually gave them their largest enrolled or highest enrollment of the history of their college off of just our one class.
Wow.
This past summer. And so I'm very proud to report that we've got great data coming in from the students. And now what we're really looking to do is help with small business accelerator programs and become just a resource overall designated in the community for trusted education.
State regulators have until January 1st next year, 2022, to finalize those rules for training and education programs. What do you hope to see in those standards and the rules and regulations that come forward?
That's a good question. I feel like there are quite a few gaps, but they have just recently added the HIPAA training back into the regulations. I actually did go and make a public comment noting that that was something that was needed to mitigate risk because we work with patients here in New Mexico. And so going forward, we will have a cannabis server permit for cannabis consumption lounges. However, my concern is that we don't have enough training for the industry overall. So I'm working closely with them to give them some of that research and then to be on standby as needed. But I'm also developing those standards so that we can plug and play within the industry. So the safety and health training that's needed for licensed dispensaries and licensed cannabis establishments overall right now is just a safety and health standard that they self-train. So what I'm hoping to do is to become a plug and play for the businesses as well so that they have somebody who's already been doing safety and security, especially the newbies coming up and starting their new business, hoping and a lot of them taking our five-star trainings to start five-star standard at their own company. So that's one way that Seed Crust is working on it. At the state level, we're seeing that it's going to take a little bit of a move in the statute to open up new training. And so I'm hopeful that those on the Cannabis Regulatory Advisory Committee have their eyes on that. And I'll be kind of, looking to be at the table when the time's right to help and to counsel outside of that. But for the time being, I'm working on our own standards so that we can implement those overall.
On our last episode at the testing lab, we met some employees that need incredibly sophisticated and specific skills. But as we discussed with you previously, people working in dispensaries and dealing with the public also need to have some pretty important skills. What are the current standards for dispensary employees when it comes to education?
Right. I'm glad that you got a little baseline around the laboratories, because that's a place there. I just want to say that we do need more lab safety, more OSHA involved, New Mexico Environment Department. And so I'm hopeful that we'll pull those folks in. And I've been kind of helping to point those gaps out. I do think that at the dispensary level, we need to see courses like ethics for cannabis professionals, safety and security, armed robbery, active shooter training, de-escalation type of courses, as well as medical, misuse, overuse, and prevention courses so that they can mitigate that risk, just like the cannabis server permitted individuals, essentially. Even though they're not serving on site, they're serving and people are able to go home and in order for them to help them to dose themselves accurately, essentially, and be that conduit of that information, we see that that's a baseline of information they need. Another piece is policy. You know, the more that the employees know at that retail level, the less likely they're going to tell the consumer something that just doesn't make sense. And maybe they're following just the guideline of the dispensary. Right now, what the dispensaries say is gospel to the consumers because they're tasked with, you know, essentially training their own employees and training the public, right? Because there's not a lot of third-party measurements out there now. So we have a baseline of information that people study called the Cannabis Establishment Technician course. That's the course and program, 40 hours, 13 modules, case studies, and we teach them how to apply each of these topics, just like HIPAA and ethics. And we do see that this certificate helps people to enter the field with the right terminology, right? Understanding the do's and don'ts and how to navigate the state systems. So I think that's a great baseline of training for individuals overall. It stems from our core compliance training, which stems and aligns with the regulations. So what we're really looking to do is keep a standard for New Mexico that's relevant, state specific, but overall encompasses those basic programs that keeps them safe and helps them to mitigate the risk for themselves.
Can you say more about the ethics piece? I'm sorry to jump in. I'm just that, like, I was really intrigued by that. What do you mean?
So at Seedcrest, we teach a course called Ethics and Code of Conduct for Cannabis Professionals. It's a traditional ethics course, yet it actually is more relevant to the cannabis industry. So we've taken, you know, an individual in the industry teaches it. Her name's Amanda Fratzola, and she works actively with patients over at Albuquerque Integrative Medicine. So what we've done is we've essentially started to study ethics and how it's applied to cannabis and the field and developed material around that so that we can work and teach the employees at that level, how does ethics apply to working in a dispensary? How does ethics apply to working in a grow and that sort of thing? So it's just like the HIPAA class. For years and years, people were studying traditional HIPAA courses. Our HIPAA is taught by a nurse practitioner who works with patients. And so she teaches the HIPAA for cannabis professionals, and they take that material and they apply it and to the relevant settings for these individuals.
How do ethics play into things like growing or working in a cultivation center? Or, I mean, are we talking about, you know, not, you know, sort of sharing other people's information if you're dealing with it, or like what sort of ethics are these employees having to navigate?
Sure. And that's it's something like, you know, teaching the employees the overall stigma first and how their ethics matter to the overall culture of the industry, as well as the bottom line of how they perform and what types of things are, you know, a moral issue, right? And are they facing a moment where there's cannabis on the floor, flower, and are they thinking they can put it in their gloves and take it to their locker? You know, there's people out there that have expressed having employees having done stuff like this. So we do give examples of, you know, we do give examples of, you know, do's and don'ts and some behaviors that are frowned upon in the industry as well.
So a lot
as
of
well
it,
as how to uphold great ethics.
Sorry, a lot of it, some of it might have to do with, I'm guessing, you know, if somebody comes in and I guess where ethics comes in compared to business, right? So it's not just the sale. You have to really sort of help that person that's in there looking for help, right? And not just think about, oh, I'm going to send you to the most expensive product we have.
That's an even better example. My brain didn't pick that up. But yes, you know, certainly when you have people come in and you are a medical, you're selling to a medical patient, much different than an adult use consumer, whereas a medical patient might need more guidance around how to use that product and thinking about how those correlate with the medical patient themselves versus something that maybe was good for you and teaching them based on what your experience has been. And so, yes, that's definitely something that we have in that segment and really in thinking about how they interact with the customers and in a positive way. And when it's time to stop interacting, if it goes above their head, and who to turn to come and help them at that point.
That was another question I had as far as training goes. I'm guessing that there's a certain element of, like you just mentioned, if you don't know the answer, don't pretend that you do, right? Because you're not a qualified doctor. You are certified under these certain qualifications, but if somebody's asking a medical question you don't know the answer to, I guess the ethical thing is to just say, I don't know, and you should seek that answer with a medical professional maybe, or
right, or who, you know, there's going to be somebody else on your team, and if not, then you walk away and maybe do some research and call that customer based on that research, or lead them to the right party in our community. We have heard from a doctor when I was on the marijuana working group under the governor. We had a visit from Dr. Avitia over at the Cancer Center, and he mentioned that some of his patients had been patients in some of the local dispensaries, and his concern at that time was that some of them were stopping their chemo and their radiation treatment because they were being misinformed by the med tenders or bud tenders that were serving them. So he came in and gave a full overview of what cancer is, how many cancers there are, and how can you possibly be giving advisement around cancer and this medicine if we don't have this type of expertise, right? And so he quite validated what we were working on and what we've been working on for about 4 or 5 years is, you know, the idea of having a highly trained industry that all speaks the same language, I guess you could say, more professional language, but also understands the population they're working with and how detrimental it is. I remember I would have students come in and they'd be super excited, and I still do, to work, you know, in cannabis. I want to work in weed. I want to work in marijuana. And I'd get all this, I want to work on a pot farm. And I would start the class by saying, that is super cool, but let's talk about the patients. And it's my grandmother coming to you. So how do you treat my grandmother who has arthritis and maybe Parkinson's or maybe is diabetic? And she's asking you now, how will this cannabis help or cross over or work against my medicines, right? Well, that's a big question for somebody in the dispensaries, right? And so I when we apply those types of scenarios, people kind of go, oh yeah, I'm not just going to be running through strawberry fields forever. I'm actually going to be working on a technical and medical job. And it changes and shifts a lot of their thought process around how much education they really want before they go into it. I've also had people go and get super nervous for the interview. They want to get a job, they've trained, but they don't want to mess up because they know it's a technical field. So hand-holding people through those processes and saying, you're going to learn as you go and find the right team members that can support you because you don't need to know it all. You really don't, right? And so there's a bit of that in the training as well.
Is the also the ethics train them to have a sense of their internal ethics? So if the place they're working is contradicting those, they need to think about their long-term future there or to speak up or things like that.
It is, and also the responsibility of ethics on the business side and the employees and how they overlap and interact. Seedcrest, we've always been proponents of teaching people exactly what they're walking into, and that means the industry overall because each brand is different. And so allowing them to self-advocate starts with education, right? And helping them because these are real people that have families and children and goals and, you know, but yet the cannabis industry is moving so quickly, it might not treat them that way. So yes, definitely to teach them how to be selective, how to look at the industry and how to see which companies align with them as well. Yes, definitely.
And I think it's worth repeating. We've talked about this before, but we're sort of in this limbo period with it when it comes to rules and regulations, right? Megan talked about lab standards and the knowledge you have to run a lab, but that's really sort of internally for each company, right? So we're sort of in this period where they're Seedcrest is presenting knowledge to people that are taking the class, but that's really just based on what Seedcrest sees as the important thing, right? We're still missing that piece of what does the state think that these people should have the knowledge of, right? So is the hope that the state sort of adopts some of the things that you at Seedcrest are doing? Is that what you're hoping for?
Definitely. And we have a role-based access for government on our software, in fact, where they can actually monitor safety and health for the first time in a much bigger and more streamlined way, because we're about to open up licenses to thousands of people, businesses all over the state. What better way than to become like the BioTrack of training, right? They do BioTrack and they track seed to sale. Well, let's track the health and safety of our workforce, and let's help the businesses to have a resource to do that. And so our goal overall is to eventually become a bigger piece of this, and also to become the guides on the certification pieces, because there's no certification, piece of this now. So quite interestingly, when I go into the colleges and talk to them about licensing our curriculum, this does come up. And the vagueness is a bit even frustrating for colleges. But as you can see, the more that we plug and play in with them, the more the colleges validate that standard with us and universities, and then it can become a standard. But this is something, Andy and Megan, that I've been working on for about 2 years now, and in closed door meetings with, you know, governors, representatives, higher ed, regulations and licensing, even before we had the Cannabis Control Division and Department of Health, is creating that certification process. So our model is a model for that, definitely.
You had mentioned to me before that you're also sort of dipping your toes into the business development waters. Is that correct? And if it is, can you explain sort of how you're adding this to your, I'm not saying you're shifting views, but maybe adding more to your plate, right?
Oh, are you talking about with the Small Business Accelerator program?
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, there's such an overlap of entrepreneurs coming in and people just trying to get a starting point that we've become a home for people. And essentially, it's cool to watch because not a lot of people have a professional setting to even talk about cannabis. So right off, we're breaking the stigma with a lot of different individuals in the community, from consumers to people that want to work, all the way to small business owners. Since we opened up legalization this past year, there's a floodgate. I mean, the floodgates are open, rather. There's a flood of people coming in wanting to pivot their businesses or wanting to start up. And they're showing up in our classes, taking our college courses, and taking our classes online. What spins off from that, especially if you do this in person, is that they want more expertise, more guidance. They want more streamlined systems. With a lack of development around that at the state level, we plug in naturally as a workforce solution and as a small business resource. So I've started developing accelerator programs, and I'm working with a group at the Bioscience Center, in fact, and this is very preliminary because we haven't really announced it until I'm announcing it a little bit now, but I'll give you more down the road. And we're looking for really to help as a small business accelerator, but traditionally. So it would be a bit of a traditional accelerator program with, business planning, sussing out entrepreneurship, adding in that cannabis track for them. So here's an example. Tomorrow at the Bioscience Center, I will be teaching a group of entrepreneurs. The name of the class is How to Start Up in the Cannabis Industry. I will be guiding them through state regulations and processes, teaching them how to read the regulations to prepare for the application process, because that's a forte of mine. And so from there, these people end up either going for their licenses or understanding the pitfalls better, the cost. I mean, we talk about all of that so that we can help them to avoid mistakes and to become more successful.
Going back to the classes at Northern New Mexico College, how much did access to these courses play into this agreement to partner up with the college? In other words, if you were just on your own, there probably wouldn't be a whole lot of financial aid offered, but this is through a college where people can kind of go through that traditional track, right? Does that give them better access than before, now that it's in an actual college?
Oh, I wish I could say we have scholarship money going to these students, but these students do not get scholarship money nor workforce financial aid, not from WIOA funding or traditional funding and higher ed.
This is because it's federal money.
Federal. Mm. So the reason these colleges are able to work and work on this is because I've created a solution where they're using our investment at Seedcrest and our curriculum so that they can offer it to their students. And so what they're doing is adding their administrative fees, and then we add our fee on as a textbook or a material cost. And it's a pass-through situation where the students are paying all out of pocket. That's why the numbers are amazing and they're history-making, because we came out of the gate with 56 students the first semester. They were projecting that we'd have 20 all year, but we landed on 149 in the last two semesters. So we had 200 enroll in over the summer, for example. So we're seeing that students are willing to pay for it, but the drop-off is that we had over 1,000 interested, 250 enrolled, and 149 came out of those two semesters. So you can see that gap there as if they had that financial backing or support, what that would look like. For that reason, at this time, we've launched the class again on our software, and we're offering financing, payment plans. And I was just speaking with Ben Lewinger over at the New Mexico Cannabis Chamber to see if we could get some sort of a scholarship support from the actual community and the stakeholderships. And so they're very interested in helping with the Small Business Accelerator Program and helping with training. So it's looking like it's going to come from the community itself, as always.
I would imagine the hope, at least partially, is that if your sort of program becomes the mandatory standard, that there's another avenue for people paying that. Maybe it's the employer, maybe it's the state just offering it, something there, right? That seems to me that it's important to offer this to everybody at the lowest cost possible if we're requiring it.
Right. And the requirement is $35 cannabis server permit, but it doesn't stretch over the 11 to 15,000 jobs we have. Only a small portion of folks will have to be permitted at $35. So it's not a moneymaker for any educator out there, right? So we don't want to make it, we don't want to create another barrier to entry. What we want to create is a bridge to the marketplace, education that promotes equity and the equity that is the education. And so there's this overlap, but what we're looking to do is really right now the marketplace isn't calling for degree programs or big career-based programs. What it's calling for are these safety programs that allow them to mitigate risk and stackable certificates, we call them, so that New Mexicans can come in, get the training, and get in. We don't want to hold them up for months on end in a college program paying thousands of dollars with no guarantees. The good news is that the systems at Seedcrest, I've been working on these for about 3 to 4 years, as you know, and the whole goal of the five-star program is to help people to navigate state processes and to own their own training until there's a better way. And I say that because the state also owns and was owning their licenses. So now this is going to be the first phase where permits, where you get self-permitted, you can move about the marketplace. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to put some other measurements in there where people can feel like they're able to get trained, get their certificate, and move about the marketplace. But it is going to take support. And I think just like any other program, it's going to take industry supporting it and some sort of support from the state for the students.
Are you looking at any other colleges to work with, like CNM or?
We are, in fact. Oh, okay. Yeah. And we're going through some approvals with CNM Ingenuity right now. And CNM on the credit side apparently is interested as well. We speak with Luna Community College here coming up on the 6th. And then we are going to be given an informational pitch to Eastern New Mexico University. And we've just been introduced to Taos UNM. And so I'm making the rounds, and the more the merrier. If anybody wants to talk about it, we're ready to go. We've got the whole package, and we can pitch fairly easily to these colleges and show them how to get involved at a cost-neutral in a cost-neutral way that allows them to move without all of the funding that they're used to, so that then we can use that data to draw the funding to us, essentially.
We talked to somebody last week for one of our Facebook Lives about sort of the dangers of underage use and that sort of thing, and it was, we got a lot of pushback from some of our listeners and readers. How much does your work, your training, go into sort of the health effects of it? I mean, are you looking at data of, you know, this is how it impacts younger people, or is it more of a sort of an industry practical training, or is it both?
There's a little bit of both in there. We've got a course called, or a module within the Cannabis Establishment Tech course called Research and Medical Developments, one called Qualifying Conditions, the Experience of Illness, and we've got quite a few, the prevention of misuse, abuse, and overuse. So we've got some, you know, some more practical classes in there, and then more of an overview. But we do talk about how the endocannabinoid system, cannabinoids, how it interacts with the body, as well as we hope to expand more on that qualifying illness and qualifying conditions class so that we can give more information. There's 28 qualifying conditions in the state of New Mexico. So that first module is about 3 hours long, and it's an overview. The research and medical developments is a 4-hour module, and they do have case studies as well. So we're doing our best to give that baseline. It's a 101 or a 100 level class that does need to be roadmapped from there so that they can learn more. That's why I say these stackable certificates are really valuable, because they can go in and get like an overview from really qualified individuals that are working in the field, And then from there, we teach them how to continue to stay updated because we're teaching them the formula that we ourselves are following, right? So we're not just teaching the material. We're also showing where we've gotten it, how to stay updated on it, and that sort of thing so that people can work autonomously on that as well.
Being a five-star candidate to me means that you're prepared for the industry, you're ready to take care of patients in terms of getting them the medication that they properly need.
We've kind of addressed this already, but what kind of person are taking your classes, your modules? I mean, it sounds like it spans from all sorts of places, but what's the most that you see? Who's taking these classes?
Interested workforce and entrepreneurs seem to be coming, and they overlap. I mean, you know, working in the industry is working in the industry, whether you own a business or whether you work for a business, a little bit of a different role, but it's still workforce overall. So it seems to be workforce. And then I'd say, apart from that, people that are consumers or they want to learn more about the plant for wellness. But I'd say about 80% of who comes to see us is workforce, entrepreneur, interested individuals.
How many people come into this with the I think it's a common misconception as far as you talk about qualifying conditions for medical cannabis, that it's designed to alleviate symptoms and not the actual condition that somebody might have, right? Is that a miss? Excuse me. Do you find yourself explaining that a lot in these classes?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And right now, explaining how the marketplace works as well. But we definitely give the closest and I'd say most relevant and most state-specific information that they can get because of how we are, how we work with government affairs. And so if I am studying, you know, something or come across one of our educators have created, you know, a certain piece of their education that it may need more clarification. We're just calling right up to the source and figuring it out. So they've got, you know, some great unbiased information that's more accurate, if that makes sense. But we do break down that language for that reason so that they can understand. And I use the story of my big fat Greek wedding where the guy sprays Windex on everything. And I say, it's cannabis is not a cure-all. That's not what we're trying to do here, right? And so, you know, letting them know that it's not for everybody too. Shoot, how about this one? What if I send Megan in to work for an extraction lab tomorrow and Megan shows up and as they're breaking down the plant or when the plant material arrives, her throat closes up and she learns she's allergic right on the spot. That has happened to us before where, you know, we're having to teach them things that they're not thinking of. Did you know you could smoke cannabis or inhale cannabis, but yet be allergic to it as it's being broken down?
No, I did not know that.
I'm a person that happens to. Wow. Okay. And so I choose to inhale my cannabis. And so when I do, I'm fine. But if I walk into a processing plant, my eyes get red, my throat closes up and I can't breathe.
So you couldn't use you probably couldn't or shouldn't use like a topical or something, right? Would it irritate your skin?
No,
or is it
for
just
me,
the raw plant
that's
material?
Just fine. Whatever comes into the air, because I'm environmentally, I have allergies. And so for some reason it gets into my airway, I think, and because of my asthma or whatever it is I've got going on, right? But for people, I've learned some of the most interesting safety and health trainings and precautions are in those little details, because we think, oh, the safety and health training should be active shooter and armed robbery because they're, you know, obviously being, you know, cased on we saw the update from that. They're obviously, you know, at a high risk industry. But really, it's also in those details, you know, for people to understand what do they do when they're in a grow with a bunch of hot lights over their heads and somebody starts to vomit. Well, that's a symptom of being in that grow and being in that grow dehydrated, being in that grow, you know, not eating that day. So being mindful of just these little things helps people. And instead of them learning the hard way, we try to put that in front of them so they can be thinking about it when they enter the field.
When you had mentioned that this is not for everybody, I often have this thought of, seems to me that for every person who is, you know, praising the gospel of cannabis, there's probably like two more people that are like, I've tried it, I've done everything, I've tried it any way possible, and it's just not for me. It seems like maybe that's part of the education too, to realize that, you know, the advocacy to try to get people to explore this other type of medicine kind of stops at a certain point, right? Where, you know, not everybody agrees, or not, it doesn't agree with everybody's physiology, basically.
Well, plus
right?
We still are lacking a lot of research, right? Because it's not you can't do federal, well, yeah. federal money for research, right? So there's more, there's still more to be done, so much more.
Yeah. And I used to, you know, in the medical cannabis symposiums that we put on in the community years back, we had a bit of the language coming forward from some of our medical educators, like everybody has an endocannabinoid system. Everybody needs this medicine. If you don't take it in, you're going to be endocannabinoid deficient or cannabinoid deficient rather. And that's not, it's, I don't know how accurate that is. I'm going to say it's not accurate at all, because there are people that it doesn't work well with, right? And so we do have to be thinking about how we are displaying this information. And over the years, we've gotten better and better and better at spotting, you know, whoa, that language is a little bit like this, or let's make sure we're not teaching from that aspect. Because yes, everyone has an endocannabinoid system, but that doesn't mean that the cannabinoids are going to work well with your endocannabinoid system, or I don't know, it might not work. There's a little bit of that. And also we have an interesting population of caregivers that don't imbibe, that do not take in cannabis, but they know it works because they've seen their loved one heal with it, or maybe mitigate symptoms that are tough on them. So I have a gentleman now who's in our classes, and he's also a nurse, and he can't because of his profession, but he's seen his wife through MS with cannabis, right? And so, but he wants to work in the field. And so it's definitely interesting to see who comes forward, but we do have a large percentage of people that come forward saying, you know, I'm a cannabis consumer and I need to be in this for that reason, because it's helped me and it works for me.
I was going to ask how this relates to something like alcohol server education, but it sounds way more complicated.
Yeah, I think that I've had my alcohol server's permit. I used to be in the restaurant business, and I do see the overlap in the risk as well. I mean, food, you know, serving folks and different allergies, all these different things that you're looking at. Your food, is it raw? Is it all these things? But it's similar, but it's more technical because of the consumer. You know, you have people walking into a bar. They're not necessarily coming in because they have multiple sclerosis or cancer or chronic pain. They might be, but at the same time, they're more identified in our industry. And so having that training is so important. I'm also of the opinion that the more we train the medical or the medical population and the patients, the closer we will get to preserving the population and the patients and getting better and better at providing wellness here in New Mexico.
I would imagine some of that comes into play when we start talking about consumption areas, which, for the record, we don't have rules or regulations on. And I've also heard that there's liability things. We may not ever see consumption areas for a while, but it seems like that the comparison to alcohol server education is the same thing. If you're running a consumption area, you probably need to know the signs of overconsumption, I don't want to use the word overdose because that brings up other things, but maybe you've used too much, you know, or maybe you shouldn't sell another, you know, gram to that person who's been there for a while. Is that coming, or is that in the training that you have now? Or
I feel like that's the idea. The training that we are creating is the training that's just in black and white on House Bill 2. And there's a few topics that is covered, I think 3 or 4 topics. One of them is likened to that misuse, overuse, and abuse that I've mentioned quite a few times. But yes, there, you know, thinking back on the work that we did in the marijuana working group, they really do want to mitigate, you know, on behalf of the public. It's a public health and safety issue. And so that training is the training promised to mitigate that for the public and to not add insult to injury to our DUI numbers here in New Mexico. Essentially, there's a lot of misconceptions with cannabis and how the law applies to consumers. So we're going to see consumers make a lot of mistakes. And so how do we get the people working in the community geared up and trained so that they can help consumers with this?
Well, we thank you again so much for talking with us, Shannon, as usual. It was fascinating.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Growing Forward, a collaborative podcast production with New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report. I'm Andy Lyman from New Mexico Political Report.
And I'm Megan Kamrick, correspondent at New Mexico PBS and news director at KUNM Radio. If you are just hearing this podcast for the first time, please go back and listen to all of our past episodes from this season and our first two seasons. And be sure to subscribe and follow if you haven't already.
And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode of the show, be sure to leave us a message or drop us a line at growingforward@nmpbs.org. Growing Forward is produced and edited by Kevin McDonald. Music is by Blue Dot Sessions and Christian Bjorklund. Our logo was designed and created by Catherine Connolly.